Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Oppressed. Dear friends, I greet you all at the People's Forum in New York City. Tahiyat Rasmiya. Khasal Hali to our Palestinian brothers and sisters there. As we reason and reflect on the plight of Palestine, let us not forget the recent passing of the late and beloved Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who is remembered today for his fierce critique of the oppression of Palestinians, which he compared to the generations of sufferers in his native South Africa under the bitter system known as apartheid. It is fitting here to recall the late Archbishop and to note the recent observations of the Francophone African scholar Achille Mbembe, who in his recent book, Necropolitics, published in 2019, sees some remarkable sights when he turns to Palestine. Mbembe writes, "Everywhere, the building of concrete walls and wire fences and other security barriers is in full swing. Alongside the walls, other security structures are emerging. Checkpoints, enclosures, watchtowers, trenches, all manner of demarcations that, in many cases, have no other function than to intensify the enclaving of entire communities without ever fully succeeding in keeping away those considered a threat. This is the case with all those Palestinian towns that are literally surrounded by areas under Israeli control." Mbembe, page 43. Professor Mbembe compares this system of repression with the apartheid system and find something quite surprising, as he writes. "Such practices variously recall the reviled model of apartheid with its bantustans, vast reservoirs of cheap labor, its white zones, its multiple jurisdictions, and wanton violence. However, the metaphor of apartheid does not fully account for the specific character of the Israeli separation project." Professor Mbembe. "This project," Mbembe explains, "is more complex, more intrusive, and emerges from deeper psychological and historical wells than that of the Calvinist project that crystallized in the 1940s to 1980s South Africa." Finally, the oppressed know something about repression, no matter where it happens. For love, not fear, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. Welcome. These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio. Thank you.
Greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, also known as Dr. Soleil. We are now in our 13th year of nonstop communications, independent and unapologetic. 13 straight years, every single week. New Day is definitely a mainstay in many of our minds, hearts, and spirits now. And we are going to continue to do that even more so now as we get ready to upgrade some things. And we'll be telling you about that a little more very soon. At any rate, tonight, we are going to have some powerful dialogue as we normally do. And, of course, for those who commemorate or observe Mother's Day, we're going to give you a little tidbit on that. Do you know the history of Mother's Day? And also, we're going to play a couple of excerpts. You just heard one, by the way, Mumia Abu-Jamal. That was one of his latest commentaries. We're going to play another one a little later on as well, because we're putting a focus on Mumia tonight and next week to get ready for something that's coming up very soon, and that is some hearing, or a hearing is coming up in regards to Mumia. Very shortly, we're going to talk with our brother, Razakar Sahib, who is going to give us an update on Mumia, health-wise, and also the legal, some of the legal things. And we're going to also talk to Brother Razakar about some things that's really been not only disturbing to us when it comes to the system, but also just some other things that's going on in our community nationwide that some of us call a new form of treason. Yep, we're going to talk about that. And, you know, we bring it live, real, and raw. So we think the time has come to begin to point out what we're talking about when we start using certain words, certain terminologies like treason. You know, we're oftentimes very quick to talk about other people and the system of white supremacy and what it does, but we oftentimes do not really get down to the nitty-gritty and talking about what's going on in our community with people who look like us. So, you know, we kind of expect certain things from certain people, but we need to now put some things in hold or on check when it comes to what's going on in our community. But here's the question. Once we bring it close to the forefront, the question has to be, what are we going to do about it? We're going to talk about that tonight and then some. Now, of course, you heard Mumia mention earlier in talking about the fight and the struggle for Palestine. And so we here at New Day, of course, are very much in support of self-determination, liberation for the Palestinian people. Have to put that on record. When we talk about, you know, fighting, resisting, and making certain that we deal with the issues of white supremacy here in the U.S., of course, us being, you know, so familiar with that, we can't help but to see and recognize some other aspects of that when it pertains to other people. At any rate, as we proceed with the We Charge Genocide 21 project, and, of course, the summit is coming up September 1 through the 4th, in Washington, D.C., and in some surrounding areas, we hope that we're going to get that international support for our efforts as Africans here in the U.S. that's now stepping up, charging the United States government with genocide, but not just the U.S. and others. I'm going to tell you more about that a little later on as well. But again, we stand in full solidarity with the Palestinian people and others that are striving for real self-determination and liberation. All right, so moving right along, family, we're going to get ready to bring in Brother Razakar in a few moments. But, of course, in background, you're hearing one of my favorites. It's a great Fela Kuti. Actually, it's his son that's playing now, and he's Seun Kuti. And by the way, we are going to do our first Fela Fest here in Philly. We got a lot of stuff coming up as preludes to the Million Woman March 25, and the Fela Fest is going to be one of them, where we highlight the music of the great Fela Kuti and, of course, others from that Afrobeat from years ago and up to the present day. So we're going to tell you more about that a little later on as well, because what we're kicking off here in Philly, we are also preparing to take it nationwide. That's right. So this year's Million Women March 25 is not just going to be a one-day event or whatever. Oh, no, 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 no. It's the kickoff for a year-long commemoration of raising up the mother of civilization, universally speaking, as well as a million Black women rising and more. So stay tuned, family, because we're getting ready to bring this in such a way that it has not been done before as we bring forward the first global movement for women and girls of African descent worldwide. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with Brother Razakhan Shaheed. All right. Now in the background, we have a cocoa bar. So, family, listen. Before we bring Brother Razakhan in, there's going to be two questions that we're going to kind of raise tonight for the family when we do an open mic. And that is, one, what do you really know about Mother's Day? And, I mean, we know that it's the sentiment and the feeling and so forth and so on. But, you know, at some point, don't we think that Black folks need to have our own holidays or our own observances? Well, we certainly think so here at New Day, and that's what MWM is definitely getting ready to make happen with our 25 sister saints that we have initiated and are planning to install. And this year, as a part of the 25-year anniversary, we will begin the campaign that we've been working on for a couple of years, and that is a national holiday for a Black woman. That's right. We'll be doing that this year at our summit, putting that in place. So when we say we're getting ready to make history today, we mean that. So I'll give you more information about that a little later on as well. But the other question we're going to ask, first one again, what do you know about Mother's Day from a historical perspective? And the other question we're going to ask is, what do you think about us having our own Queen Mother's Day? We're going to talk to Brother Lumumba Uncaged, who is really beginning to initiate that movement for our women, Queen Mother Day. What y'all think about that? We're going to open up the mic a little later on and get your opinion about that. But for now, let's open up the mic, and we're going to bring in Brother Razakhan Shaheed, who is also the editor and publisher of Nation Time publication. And we're going to talk a little bit about that as well, because, you know, we now have the Black Whirlwind News to collaborate with other independent Black folks with media, communications, and information services. So without further ado, let's open up the mic and bring in Brother Razakhan. Let me make sure. There you go. Hey, Brother Raz, how you doing tonight?
Oh, good, sis. Glad to be here. Much respect.
Glad to have you. Glad to have you. Always. So before we go into the topics that we want to talk about, just share with the family a little bit about you, what you do, why you do it, and so forth, because I'm sure there's some people who, you know, haven't heard you on our program before or are not familiar with your work. So tell us a little bit about your work.
Okay, I'm with Nation Times Judicial Research. What that is, I was incarcerated for like 28 years, and in that time I run into a lot of paralegals, because I got to be one while I was incarcerated. And right now, well, I came home in 2006. We have a mailing list of 400 inmates, you know what I mean, not celebrities or whatever the case may be, just individuals that done got caught hard times or whatever the case may be. And we got about 25 or 30 of them that are paralegals themselves. What they do is teach individuals how to help themselves get out. You know, you had a lot of people that came into the institution that couldn't even read. You know what I mean? And we started to teaching people how to get themselves out. And basically, that's basically what we do. And not only do we do legal research, we give them family guidance, educational material, political material, so they'd be able to call home, talk to their wives and children and whatever the case may be, and be able to keep up with what's going on. And what we do tell them is the truth. They have to know something about the law, so you know when the individuals that's supposed to be representing you, like congressmen and representatives and you know, people that supposed to know the law and don't follow the law themselves. And we catch them at that all the time.
Wow. All right. So, Raz, before we go on, how can folks, you know, how can people get more information? And we'll repeat this a little later on. But how can people, because the services and the information that you provide, you know, 9 times out of 10, we all know somebody that is incarcerated. So it's really important that we now step it up and really connect to the kinds of services and information that, you know, that we need to make sure our people have. So how can folks, you know, get more information?
Okay, the best way they'd be able to do that is to send me an email, nationtimejr@outlook.com. And and you send me whatever your problem is, whatever the case may be, whatever you feel as though you need assistance with, and we'll take it from there.
Okay.
Yeah, nationtimejr@outlook.com.
Okay. And family, if you didn't get it then, we will repeat that again a little later on. So if you didn't get a pen or pencil to write with or whatever, we're going to give you time to do that. Okay, so when you say Nation Time, you know the first thing that came into my mind, and I'm sure this would also help to inspire you, was, of course, the great work of Baba Herman Ferguson and Mother Aula Ferguson. So, you know, they were, of course, very much mind behind what was known as Nation Time newspaper. So tell folks a little bit about, you know, how that influenced some of your work.
That's who did it. I mean, that's where I got the name from. He gave it to
right.
me. Heaven,
right
here, Lua, you know what I mean? And they had a bunch of newspapers and gave me a pile of them. And as I was reading the newspapers, the same thing that they were talking about in 2005 and, quite a while ago, is the same thing that's going on today. But what I was realizing that nobody holds nobody accountable. The individuals that's in position, you know what I mean, judges, lawyers, police, everybody has to follow the law just like we do. But you got to know the law to force them to do the law. When I first came home, I started the Philadelphia Innocent Project because there was no Innocent Project. And I got a lot of flack from Barry Shack and them from the New York Innocent Project because they wanted me to join in with them. And I said I didn't have a problem with that, but they did DNA evidence, and they didn't do actual innocence. And the difference is we trying to get we sending police to jail, we sending judges to jail, or prosecute whoever we catch breaking the law, we're going to file against them to penalize them for that. And the Innocent Project, New York Innocent Project, didn't want no part of that, you know. So this is why I started with the Nation Time.
Now, the other thing that I need to share with our family is because folks are hearing us as we prepare to hold our first pre-plebiscite session. Our first pre-plebiscite convention forum is going to happen as a part of our We Charge Genocide 21. And like you, Brother Rise, one of the ways that I got introduced to the idea of a plebiscite was, again, you know, by way of our elders, Baba Herman Ferguson and Mama Aua. And of course, President Amari Obadeli, you know. These are names that you don't hear much anymore, and that's why I'm bringing it up, because we get, you know, this selected amnesia. When our people get their lives, their blood, sweat, and tears, you know, and hard work, you know, and a lot of times they get ill, you know, because of so much work that they're putting in. And then, you know, after a while, you know, particularly when they make transition, it seems like, you know, sometimes folks just forget about their contribution. So that's why we make it a point to continue to say the names. You know, folks do it all the time. They make sure you know who their people are, because they're going to make sure that they ram that in folks' heads. You know, whoever made a contribution that they feel proud of or that they want, they're going to make sure people know who their people are. So we need to at least do, you know, not what they do, but make sure that our people, you know, are not negligent and remiss when it comes to our heroes and sheroes. So again, you know, big ups to Baba Herman Ferguson, of course, Mama Alua, who is still with us, and of course, Baba Imari Obadeli. All right. So, wow. Oh, by the way, is the newspaper still operable? Is someone?
No.
Okay.
Nobody is running it now. That's what I say. They had a bunch of them up there, and I took as many as they gave me. You know what I mean? And I'm telling you, reading through it, it's just like they're still here and nothing has changed.
Wow. Well, Brother Rise, we are planning to make our first live copy edition. What we call the Black Whirlwind News. We're gearing up to have hard copies of that for August, for Black August. So maybe we can collaborate and have a section in there, you know, that's nation time. And so let's talk about that in the near future, because the Black Whirlwind News, you know, we had here in Philly, of course, the Black Star with Brother Henry and others. And, of course, unfortunately, you know, like a lot of stuff that happens in our community, it doesn't get the kind of support that it should. And as a result, it, you know, has to end. So we're now getting ready to implement our own independent newspaper. We finally have a printer now. We finally know, you know, how to proceed. So we're doing it online. Presently, we'll be doing it for the next couple of months online, but now we're planning for August to introduce it in the community. So hopefully, let's talk more about how we might be able to get, you know, some of your articles or letters or whatever in the Black Whirlwind News.
Okay, that'll be beautiful. Yes, that would be a wonderful thing.
Great, absolutely. All right. Okay, so now getting back to your writings, and that's what we're talking about. We want to connect with other Black folks that, you know, write, that, and not just write, but really have a sense of what they're talking about, why they're talking about it, and it's not just, you know, an article. You know, nowadays, a lot of, you know, journalism and reporters and things like that that we see in some of these regular newspapers, it's a job. That's a job for them. They don't really care about the issues, you know. If it has some juice to it or some energy to it that they feel, you know, that they can, you know, do something with, then they'll print it or they'll write it. I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to say this really publicly come October, the Black newspapers here in Philadelphia will not cover Million Woman March stuff, you see. And I'll go into later why. Because people need to clearly know and understand the manipulation of the power tricksters and the petty bourgeoisie, et cetera, you see. And see, this is why we're having this conversation, to speak truth to power, because it is about exposing what needs to be exposed, but also coming up with plans of action that's going to deal with solutions. So with that said, Brother Raj, you've been writing letters, basically, but some could really say articles, you know, depending on how you want to format it. But your letters have been like, woo, you're talking about kicking some butt. Okay. I can't put it any simpler than that. I mean, well written, you know, very poignant, but very straight to the point, you see. So I want to talk a little bit about, you know, why you started writing these letters, and then we're going to go into some of the last ones that I saw, particularly that talked about the misrepresentation in various so-called professional fields, right? But tell us what motivated you to start writing these letters to expose and to convey and to provide insight into some of the problems that's going on, not just in the judiciary system, but also in some of these movements.
Oh, right. Because, like I said, I was supplying, and not only just supply information, is a communication type thing. I first started just writing the individuals that was incarcerated on my mailing list to see what they had to say about what I had to say. And then they would give me feedback or ask me questions concerning certain things or whatever the case may be. And then I'm showing them, and then a lot of them be following different groups and organizations and whatever the case may be, and I'm asking them, what do your organization do for you? Besides, right. and then the NAACP, Reverend Sharpton, all these groups, and I listen to them, and they'll encourage people to vote, you know what I mean? But when the vote don't turn out, they blame it on black people. Black folks didn't show up, you know what I mean? And they be setting it up like that. And the thing is, they don't do their job. Like just recently, they had the voting rights bill shot down, but now they got 13 senators that should be in jail. They done violated the law. They committed, that's the treason we was talking about, because they committed treason. They got a thing called when you violate your oath of office, the penalty is you forfeit your seat. And I'm not saying this because I'm saying I give them the statute. 5 U.S.C. 7311, you can read it for yourself. I mean, it's just self-explanatory. So why you see Biden and all them guys talking about we got to get out and vote? I mean, Trump done already told them we going to put people in there that will take your vote and give it to whoever I tell them to give it to. Then what you going to do?
Right.
I mean, he told them that.
Right.
Yeah, these people should be in jail right now. And they don't even bring it up. Never. I mean, one time this woman said she had Hildebrand, whatever one of them women that voted for the Supreme Court justice that lied. And they asked and said, well, do you feel as though he lied when he had a confirmation? Because that is a felony. You know what I'm saying? But they're trying to tell us that the only way you can get rid of a judge, you got to impeach him. No, you lock him up, charge him, and then bring him to court, and then he's gone. Simple as that.
But
we got to force them to follow the law.
Right. So, but with that said, Roz, given the fact, and this is kind of a double-edged sword question, right? So, all right, we already know that for the most part, their laws is really not for us anyway. But the point that you're making is that not only do they not follow their own law, because we already know it really ain't going to work for us anyway, for the most part. I mean, every now and then, you know, yeah, but generally speaking, that stuff is not, except the stuff that they make that's against us specifically, such as Jim Crow laws and things like that. But generally, their laws ain't really for us anyway. But I think that the point that you're making is that this stuff has gotten so out of control now that they're not even following their own stuff.
And nobody brings it up. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I sent judicial notice to Gardner. I mean, Merrick Garland, the new attorney general. I'm telling you, he's not doing his job. You know what I mean?
Right.
And they should fire him now because he's ineffective. But now, normally when you put a petition in, they got to hear it. You know what I'm saying? But now they send me my money back and say I done did something wrong, whatever. And that's unheard of. You know what I mean? But somebody has to challenge them. Once you put it out there and let them see that these folks is outlaws, they telling everybody to follow the law. They don't follow the law. And they want you to vote. They want you to do that. And then they don't even represent themselves. Congress is supposed to be who runs the government. We the people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If they don't take that seriously, judges are not higher than Congress, the Senate, the President. I mean, Congress is supposed to be able to take them all down, but there's nobody in Congress worth 2 cents that would say anything.
And
I'm saying, if anybody would look up a violation of oath of office, and you will see for yourself, these people had no right to vote down the Voting Rights Act because they was illegal themselves. But now the individuals that allowed it, they know that. You know, the Black Caucus and the rest of these individuals, they know that these people don't have the authority to do it, but they allow it to happen because what they want is acceptance. What we look for is to win. Yeah, we fight to win.
So given the fact that we know for the most part, and no, don't get me wrong, I'm suggesting that we still don't fight back because that's a part of the whole thing. But at the same time, don't you feel, do you feel we need to start developing our own something? Because after 400 years, obviously, whatever these people talking about doing or whatever, they have no intention whatsoever to do the right thing by us or for us. I mean, after 4 centuries, truly, you know, if we don't get this by now, I don't know when folks think they're going to get it. But the point is, what most people do in situations where they are either subjugated or going through, you know, some kind of exploitation, or whatever, they then do things to, if not try to dismantle it, or they try to do something that is going to go up against it, and if nothing else, create something for themselves. You see? So my point is, so do you think, or do you feel, or in your opinion, do you think we need to be putting more time and effort and energy into us creating what we need to create to really go up against whatever they're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But what we have to do is make the people understand that these are outlaws. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And showing them that they are outlaws. They can't stand up and say that we should be following them. And then they have all the so-called black elites with them, you know, misleading us, trying to follow them, saying that they're doing something. You know what I mean? And then they'll use our best and brightest individuals as boogeymen. You know, that's what they use Mumia for. All they got to do is mention Mumia's name with it. That's how Debo Abdul Deli lost his job. You know what I mean? Because was the only person that could stop the Republicans from changing the voting laws. They put up a case called Shelby County versus Holder versus Shelby County, and this one brother was stopping them in their tracks, and they said that he was with the NAACP. He represented Mumia Abu-Jamal, and they took him from his job. Not the Republicans, the Democrats did that. It was 7 Democrats that voted him out. And that's how it always happened. Yeah, they mad with Clarence Thomas. Biden put Clarence Thomas on the bench. Biden, all inspector, and 11 Democrats.
Wow.
I mean, we getting bombarded by everybody. You know what I mean? We got to do is recognizing it, you know what I mean, and fight the enemy no matter where they are.
That's right. And so, you know, for the past few years, Brother Roz, I've been suggesting to folk that we need to begin establishing our own collectives, cadres, or whatever you want to call them, to at least begin, at least to try. For example, like you mentioned earlier, the Action Network people and the NAACP. Well, where's ours? What are we trying to put together that, you know, see, right now, unfortunately, and it took me a minute to really look at this carefully or more carefully, because here's the reality. Who do we have that is readily available on a national level that deals with the issues of civil rights? You see? So, it's really only two groups. So I'm saying, for those of us who are what I call progressive or, you know, more about our people, you know, genuinely speaking, et cetera, my point is the masses of our people have no real alternatives presently.
Yeah.
The people who is out there that they see, that they're familiar with, that, you know, their voices are heard, are the Sharptons, the Charlatan people, the NAACP people, the Barber, and them people. So I'm saying, on one hand, yes, we have to look at that in a critical way, but on the other hand, we got to look at ourselves, too, and say, what are we putting together on a national level? Not you know, we got a lot of little groups or groups in our communities all over the country. But we're in the 21st freaking century, which means if the Black Panther Party could feed children every day all over the country 50-plus years ago, you're telling me in the 21st century with technology and all this other stuff, that we don't have anything in our communities that's connected on a national level that's really about some resistance.
Mm-hmm.
See, something's wrong with that picture. Something is truly wrong with that picture. So we got to do some critical analysis. And by the way, family, that's what our upcoming summits is going to do. We're going to break this stuff down and put some things in place. I've been asking people for 3 years or more, why can't we have the National Association for the Advancement of Black People?
Yeah.
You see? Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, because it makes no sense. Well, these other people are not going to do beyond a certain point. Don't we know this? 100 years. We don't know this yet. So rather than continuing to, you know, even waste time, why don't we put our own things together? Same thing with the, why can't we have the Anti-Black Defamation League? Or the Anti-Defamation Black League? You know, why can't we have our own? Some other people got that thing going on. You talk about one of their people, they on your behind. They on your behind. But with our people, they say anything they want to say, do anything they want to do, and where's the real, you know, voice and repercussion? See, we're not organized to do anything. So I got to now look and say, where are the folks that say they about certain things that's working towards building something that's going to connect on a national level? Because that's what time it is. So again, family, we're going to put that out there in September and October. That's going to be some critical questions being raised. And as Brother Razakhan in his writings are exposing the treachery and the other kinds of just insanity, we have to now bring it all across the board. You know, because we know that the Congressional Black Caucus is not going to do anything beyond a certain point. We know that.
Ain't no question about that.
Sure. Ain't no question about that. So you know, again, educating our people is very important because a lot of our people really don't even know how the system works or how it don't work. Let's put it that way. They still think that they're literally going to vote. You know, and again, on the local levels, you know, you can do a little something. But on that other one, the most people don't even know of the Electoral College and how that works, what that means. You know, we're under some illusions. And so we have to really help our people to know some real truth and how and what it is that we must do. So, Brother Russell, let's talk a little more about some of your last letters. Now, you were talking about the treason of the so-called officials. And so, again, you know, I always look at the historical perspective and see how with the North and the South, they've been doing that stuff with each other, you know, since they came into conception. You know, like Brother Malcolm said, a Dixiecrat, the Democrat ain't nothing but a Dixiecrat. It's all
that's
the same
it.
Thing. Yeah.
The problem is we don't seem to be able to recognize that. You know what I mean? We seem to think that we're getting some help from the Democrats, and the Republicans can't do us no harm. The Democrats step in and do it. And we reward them.
Right.
You know, some of our black leaders has run behind them like I don't know what to say. I just don't and we just be getting it from both ends, and the individuals that do speak up, or then when we do start to making some progress, here comes the money that'll step in. You know what I mean? Because like we was doing some good things on prison reform, not actual prison reform, because there's no way you can reform prison. You know that's like human injustice.
That's right.
We was going for judicial reform.
Right.
So what do the powers that be do? They put up $50 million and get some of our best individuals or the most recognizable individuals to front, like they're going to do something.
That
prison reform thing that Trump and them gave $50 million to Robert Kraft. Robert Kraft is the owner of the New England Patriots and Donald Trump's number one man. But then what they wind up doing, they got Jay-Z, they got Van Jones, and they got Meek Mills to head the supposed to be the leader of that. You know what I mean? I don't know what's going on, what's happening. You know what I mean? But I'm saying people need to go to jail. If they ain't sending nobody to jail, they just interfering, blocking. You know, because they were supposed to go down Mississippi or somewhere where all them brothers were getting killed. They still getting killed down
there. Yep. Well, you know, again, we have to deal with those things as they are. On the other hand, we have got to start formulating our own everything. This is what we have to do. Our people did it 100 years ago. We know about Tulsa. We know about Rosewood. We know about other independent communities. And, yes, we know what happened then. The plus side of this now is, this is what I tell people, 100 years later, we now have international connections. So I'm not saying that that's going to change a whole lot, but, you know, it does. Well, you of all people, you know, even in Mumia's case, in Mumia's situation, if it wasn't for that additional international connection, needless to say, Mumia would probably still be on death row, if not worse.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, nowadays, we do have some other possibilities and capabilities that we did not have 100 years ago to that degree. So
that's
for
understandable,
us to build some
too.
Things,
that's right. Under Mumia is the one that's keeping him in there. You know what I mean? Because the lawyers that he has no business making the rookie mistakes that they make. I'm just sorry.
Mm.
That's just how it is.
Mm.
The rookie mistakes they make. To me, it's got to be purposely done. And it wouldn't be the first time they got hot profile lawyers to sell him out. You know what I'm saying? I communicate just these letters that I sent out. When I be saying that, you know, they got the judge that gave Mumia a new appeal.
Right.
They got him off the case. Now, they didn't penalize him per se, because they put him in a more prestigious situation, you know what I mean? So he couldn't complain about that. But now, it's never the Mumia's case again.
So now, speaking of that, Brother Roz, there's something coming up in a couple of weeks in regards to a hearing. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I'm curious to see myself. You know what I mean? Because Judge Tucker gave them what they asked him to be heard on. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
He wanted a new appeal. Judge Tucker gave it to him. But now with Krasner was complaining about, he said he thought that Mumia's lawyers was procedurally barred because they filed too late. You know what I'm saying? On the Williams
right,
case.
Right. Right. Right.
So now that's what that Judge Castile. So Tucker told them, and if you read his what he said in his thing, he said, I'm not giving it to you on the Williams case. I'm giving it to you on the newly discovered evidence that that y'all got from Judge Castile, the letter he wrote. So they had it. But his lawyers appealed that.
Okay, so
we'll see. You know, I'm trying to figure out where they're coming from too. So we'll just see. You know what I mean?
So, but what are they saying?
I mean, you got to call it out as you see it, and when you see it,
right.
No matter where it comes from. That's just how it goes. This is how we get the only way we can protect us. And then I tell people, if I'm wrong, show me, and I will shut up. And ain't nobody shut me up yet.
I know that's right. That's what I say too. You know, and so he said, but I don't like what she said. I don't like the day he said I'm lying. I love it. You know, oh, she said this. Yeah, I said it, but she didn't say I was lying.
And the ones that do lie, they have nothing to say about it, and they act like they can't do anything about it. The FCC rules say that you cannot mislead news or misrepresent the news. Fox could go to jail now if the FCC would do their job.
And of course,
I mean,
that's
what the law said.
Right, right. But you know, again, it's their law. It's like, you know, anything else. People that make their own laws. Yeah,
you're right.
They
got to challenge them to make them say that, yeah, it's the law and I'm not going to follow it. We know they're not
right.
following it, but they're not saying
right,
they're
right.
not following it. People don't even know the law exists.
Well, listen, you know, that's one of the reasons why I like doing the radio kind of format that we have, because the FCC regulations is not the same. And so we have a little bit more flexibility to be able to say certain things without there being any kind of penalty or what have you. That's the beautiful thing about internet radio is you don't have as much of the regulations as you have with regular commercial radio, TV and media outlets.
Right.
All right.
Right.
So listen,
but you can't put out, can't broadcast false information that causes substantial public harm. You cannot do that.
Right.
Even if you're just, you know, you can't tell people, hey, everybody run out of their house. A bomb getting ready to go off or something like that. People run
right.
out and have them stomp themselves to death. You are responsible, whether it's just the internet or whatever. I mean, that's as far as the FCC
right.
is supposed to deal with it. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, in a serious
right.
situation like that.
Well, you and I both know that as slick as most of these networks are, they have the capability to put stuff out there and then to, you know, camouflage it or to, you know, to do other stuff with it to make it seem as though it is within the journalistic realm of you know, of that structure. You know, that it's a slippery slope, as they say. That's what it is anyway.
But then you got the regular supposedly regular news that got, then made regulations for themselves where they don't confront people. You know what I'm saying? Because they're saying that's you're putting yourself into the story. They got rules
right.
against personally. You
oh,
know,
yeah.
To not tell call people a liar and all that kind. They just start calling Trump a liar. You know what I mean?
Right.
After he done lied a million times.
Right, right.
Yeah, you know,
you
all
know,
before they were saying he was misrepresenting the truth, and he's like the court say, you know, when they catch police lying. That was a case that I had. The judge told me he took liberties with the truth. You know what I mean? I said, that's a good one. You know what I mean?
You know, that's one of the reasons why, what you just said points clearly, one of the reasons why Mumia was such a threat and still is, but definitely when he was doing regular so-called radio and TV, because he knew the ins and outs. He knew how to do that stuff and stay within the parameters of how they have it structured. So my point is he can give you a story and do it in such a way where it was just so crystal clear. And then at the same time, he did it within the parameters of, you know, whatever that journalistic creed code and stuff was.
Yeah.
He knew that stuff backwards and forward. And they hated him for that. They hated
him. That's right, because he made it plain that they were outlaws.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Right. And you couldn't discredit him. He knew how to balance the story. He knew. I mean, he just had all the nuances, the whole thing. And that was dangerous. That was very, very dangerous. So, you know. But listen, brother,
they're
stay
still
right
afraid
here.
Of. This is why they is
no
number
doubt.
One boogeyman. Wherever they want to get
no
rid of
doubt.
Somebody, they put Mumia with him or use Mumia's name with their name, and they're going to run for the hills.
So let me go to callers. We're going to go to you now. If you have a question or a comment for Brother Raj, we're going to let you come in now, and you can press 1 and, you know, join the conversation. And listen, we're talking about several things. We're talking, of course, and by the way, you know, there's a saying, of course, amongst us that deal with certain issues, and that is you definitely cannot expect to go to the court of the crook and think that he's going to, you know, penalize himself. I mean, that just doesn't make sense. It's not going to really happen beyond a certain point. They'll show some few examples because they have to try to, you know, continue to give this kind of presence in the bigger scope. You know, they want people at least continue to think that that's what something is. So they're going to give folks a few victories or, you know, a few wins or whatever. But overall, that stuff ain't changed none. In fact, it got worse. Y'all just seen that with the attempted coup takeover. And again, speaking of folks going to jail, man, please. Y'all know if some black folks was doing that stuff, y'all know what would have happened. Not only would they be in jail, some of them would have been dead, for real.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know. You know
when you do have individuals that try to come out according to the law, like Christopher Dahmer, Doria,
yeah.
You remember Christopher Doria,
yeah.
The ex-police from L.A., he caught somebody that was beating up a prisoner, and he turned them in, and they fired him. Yeah, and he took his guns, whatever the case may be, and took over California.
Yeah.
One man.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it is what it is. And what I'm saying again is, I mean, we just saw COVID gave us a clear example of what these people can and will do. And that was mild version. That was just a trial run to see if they could run game and people go along with it. And they did. Mm-hmm. And they literally had stuff shut down, you know, and folks just sat back and like, oh, yeah, okay. I mean, what could you do? So that demonstrated very clearly not only what the capability is, but also, you know, if you think that was you know, just like a first-time thing, yeah, okay, watch and see. They know how to run this thing now for real. They just had a perfect, excellent example of how to implement martial law.
That's
right. And other stuff from the Patriot Act. They just gave us a good example and a good dose of it, you know. So it's on. So I'm checking to see if anybody has a question or a comment, and I'll say it again, family, if you do, you can press 1. I'm not seeing anyone so far, so I guess I'll go to my last question for Brother Raj, and that is, Brother Raj, what are you working on something in particular right now, any project that you're actually working on right now? I know you're usually doing several things, but is it something in particular that you're working on right now?
Oh, no. It's basically the same thing that we normally do, you know what I mean, for inmates or whatever the case may be. It was, because we have to fight the powers that be even when we write, you know what I mean? I'm thinking about the time we had a case in court, you know what I mean? It was everybody was involved in it. You know what I mean? You got 2,000 inmates that was illegally sentenced, and the court had to agree that they were illegally sentenced. But Obama appealed it and kept these 2,000 black people in jail because even the judge had to say, well, you seem like you are afraid of administering too much justice. But his concern was if you let many black people out at one time, the Republicans will say he's soft on crime and he letting all the black folks out of jail, but they were in jail illegally. You remember that time he walked through the jails pretending he was looking at the suit of cells and all that kind of stuff, and he pardoned a few people? Those people were ruled to be illegally incarcerated 2 years before that.
Wow.
And that is a real case. You know what I'm saying? 2,000 people.
Right. Wow. Well, needless to say, I mean, we got our work cut out for us. But again, it's very important that simultaneously we expose some of this stuff to a greater extent and now, you know, up our game and take more action. We got to figure out what else we can now do in addition to what we're already doing, of course. But now we got to do some other things. Okay, I do see someone that wants to have a question or a comment. We're going to go to caller at 9498. Your mic is open. Welcome to this segment of New Day.
Hello, Sister Filet. How you doing?
Hey, Brother Ray Ray.
All right. Good to see you. Good to hear the great people of Philly. Thank you, Brother Raza Khan.
Thank you.
Real good stuff. That's one of the reasons why in New York, our new illustrious mayor is getting ready to do the trying to blame the where he can't get a control on crime on the judges letting the so-called criminals out. Meaning, do you really think somebody that just came out of jail is going to commit another crime real quick? You know, it's ridiculous. And I know the rapper Jay-Z personally, and no matter how much money they give him, he's still full of crap with what they do for the bosses that control them. You know, and it's just a shame what's going on there, and you're 100% right. So thank you for the information, and it's real good. Thank you, Brother Rod. Thank you, Sister Philet.
Basically, what they do is they interfere. They block people from really doing stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You can see we got plenty of money to work with, and we got nothing.
Right.
And I had just went into, they had a thing on the news, in the newspaper, how, well, we got all these fired city workers out, and they went to canceled all these appointments with in the city and went to this conference in California. Basically given by the Milken Institution. I just happened to Google it, and the head of the whole thing is Michael Milken, the junk bond king. The junk bond king that was running with Ivan Bolsky and them.
Right. Trump pardoned him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Trump pardoned him, and so he's down there talking about innovation and bringing stuff back to the city, and And none got it. Ain't nothing but a scammer running the whole thing. Michael Milken. So it's and it's just diabolical that the people don't see it or they don't want to see it. And everybody's saying Happy Mother's Day, but what's getting me real mad is Microsoft, Gates, Soros, the whole Democratic Party done killed all these people, grandmothers, mothers, fathers, during this goddamn, excuse my language, during this scamdemic, pandemic, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got the nerve, the audacity to tell us to celebrate Mother's Day.
And you know, Brother Ray Ray, that's what
they
I was saying
did,
earlier.
They did my mother-in-law in. In Lenox Hill. Quarantined. Threw the big rim on her.
Mm-hmm.
And threw us out of the hospital. The police.
Mm.
And they got the stinking nerve to say. Another friend of mine did his mother in the nursing home, and they got the nerve to still want people to say Happy Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a stinking shame, and I hope they all, from all the silent people that don't want to speak up, that don't even want to speak up. I hope they rot for not speaking up, for not opening up their mouth, just silence. Won't even put it on social media. And then you're going to say, everybody is opening up their mouth, the Democratic Party and all of them, for a woman's right to choose, but not when it comes to the vaccine, and then you catch a heart attack.
Yeah, well,
let me get off my soapbox because I'm mad. I am mad, and I'm going to stay mad. I am mad, and I'm going to stay mad.
No, that's right. All right, Brother Ray Ray, thank you. And just remember what I keep saying is until we have our own and until we strive to get our own, they're going to do them. This is what they do. They're going to do what they do, okay? And, you know, it's like we said the other week, you know, remember that we played something about the I think it was Oscar Brown Jr., and he talked about how, you know, the woman brought the snake in the house, you know, after the snake charmed and said, look, let me in, let me in. And he said, and the woman finally let the snake in. And then after the snake bit her, you know, she said, why you bite me? I was good to you. And the snake said, you knew I was a snake.
That's right.
So my point is, what, you know, we know what these people are. We know what they're going to do.
That's right.
We better be focusing on what we're going to do. That's it. That's where I'm at with this now. What is our plan? Because they got one. And theirs is about eliminating us.
They sure do.
That's right. They're going to eliminate us. So, Brother Ray Ray, believe me, what you just said, that you hope this, that, and the other, well, guess what? You ain't got to hope. These people are going to get rid of a whole bunch of people. They do not need all of us anymore. They're going to reduce those numbers. And so it's on. It's already going down.
Well, you see what Roz was saying, and here you have another. See, the thing with black folk, you get a black person in front, and black folk going to be quiet. They ain't opening up their mouth. You got Obama, the CIA president, all of a sudden wants to stop information. So in other words, what Razakhan or you or anybody say, if they don't deem it, they say, no, what you say don't mean nothing. And you can have a bunch of letters behind your name. And this is I don't know what he is. He's coming out of the woodwork. They want to block that.
And they got to remember, too, that America run the best hacker out of America and sent him to Russia, Ed Snowden. He taught the CIA, the FBI, he taught all of them how to hack into computers.
Bad
he
dude.
Tried to tell Obama that they was hacking everybody. You know what I mean? He worked for Booz Allen, and this is a company. Telling people that everything that they know, all the information that they get goes through his company before they goes to the government, and they run him out.
Bad dude. So it's just a shame. So happy Mother's Day, whatever it is. But for the people that lost their people during this scamdemic, and it ain't too happy for them. Thank you.
All right, my brother. Well, thank you, Brother Ray Ray. All right, family. Listen, we're going to get ready to close out with Brother Raz, and we're going to go back to him now and get his closing comments. And before we do, we want you to know that coming up next, we're going to talk to Brother Lumumba on Cage, and we're going to raise that question in terms of, are we ready to commemorate and embrace our own Queen Mother's Day? We're going to talk about that next. Okay. All right, Brother Raj, you got some closing comments for us for tonight.
Yes, I'd like to give a shout-out to Mama Cola Clark. You know what I mean? She's in the hospital. She had a stroke. And I used to argue with her all the time. And so I read in a book that she's, I used to tell her about the Black Panthers and SNCC and all that old kind of stuff. And I read in a book that they and she taught all them guys. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm talking with her, and we went to D.C. together one time, and when they had the Gina 6 thing, and Katrina Wallace was there.
Yes.
And she took it over. Love you, Mama Coley Clark. That's all I want.
Yes. I remember her very well, also. Well, I'm hoping now, with what's coming up, that more of our women, I'm hoping, will embrace our history as Black women. Because over these past two decades, what I realized is, for some reason, Black women don't really embrace Black women's history. You see, we do a lot of other stuff, but unfortunately, when it comes to us as women, see, this is the one thing that white women, they make sure. I find it funny. But it's true. White women going to make sure you know all about them. They're going to make sure that you know about white women's history, from the suffrage movement to whatever else, and they continue to do that to this day. Black women do not embrace our history, and that's one reason why MWM is launching the National Black Women's History Program, so that we can, by state, know who the women are in our communities and our history, and teach that. Teach it. You know, it's a disgrace how in our own communities we won't even, uphold and teach our own history to our children. So of course these other people, our enemies in particular, of course they're going to do what they do to us. Because look at what we're doing to our own selves. And they see that and go, oh, man, y'all don't care nothing about that. We're going to take it. So they try to do that. So, my regards to Mama Colia. And again, I'm hoping that Black women will now step up and really be more supportive of our own women. Because I'm telling you, I've seen it up close and personal over these past years, Brother Raz. We Black women are doing wonderful, wonderful things, reparations, prison, homelessness, all these things, our women are all in that. But ask them what they're doing for Black women. 9 out of 10, you ain't going to get no real answer. Or it'll be sparse, and that puts it mildly.
And there's something wrong with that. You know, there's really, really something wrong with that, because black women have definitely been a backbone when it comes to struggle. So, you know, we got to change some stuff up. Got to change some stuff up. So, all right, Brother Ross, before you go, let folks know again how they can contact you, because I know they're going to want to do that. So let them know the best email address, et cetera, for them to reach out to you.
Okay. It's Nation Time. JR, because it's Nation Time Judicial Research, but I used to use the JR at Outlook.com.
All right.
And if you got a problem, send it to us. If you got somebody that's incarcerated and you want somebody to look into it, it don't make no difference what state they're in, whatever the case may be, we'll track them down.
All right. Before you go, Brother Raj, have you heard any updates on Reverend Joy Powell, Sister Joy Powell? Because I've been trying to get through to someone, because we want to really be more active in her, in getting her free. But her website's been down. And then I've been trying to contact the people, you know, the email addresses and stuff that they have out there, and nobody's responding. Have you heard anything?
Oh no! Well, I used to stay up with her through the Jericho movement. You know what I mean? Because they had the information they have up on her is not proper either.
Well, I mean, you know, they have the information up there like they do everybody else. But I'm saying her website, which used to have her weekly postings, that's been down. And so I used to connect directly with. You know, the free Joy, right?
Quite a while, you know what I mean?
They're not responding. I hit them on Facebook. The website has been down. I've called a couple of people, and I'm not getting any response. And that's not good. That's not good at all.
It's not. It's been on her for quite a while.
Yeah. No doubt.
I'm
so
into that too. You know what I mean? Like I said, I haven't written her in quite a while, but I see her name all the time on the Jericho website, you know, so, I just assumed that they were communicating with her, whatever the case may be. But we'll see.
Well, I'll check to see. Yeah, I'll check again to see. But I've asked a couple of people that were involved in Jericho, and, again, nobody that I've talked to seemed to know anybody. I mean, seemed to know anything. But I just found it strange that her website is down. That was my first clue that something's not right, because that website has been up for, you know, as long as she's been incarcerated. And, again, she was posting weekly. She was posting stuff, somebody was having her to post stuff weekly, right? And it's not happening. It wasn't happening. So we'll go into a little trouble and see what happens. But all right, my brother, I thank you again, and it was a wonderful conversation. And we're going to talk soon to, you know, see if we can get some of your writings into the Black Whirlwind News.
Okay, I'll be blessing.
Yes, indeed.
And, you know,
all
I
right,
would like
brother.
These papers I got. I got some from 1998 and all that kind of stuff from Nation Time. I told you they just gave
what?
Me, believe me, some of the articles that they write is still relevant today.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, let's do it. We owe it to the elders to continue to make sure that those voices in that work is continued. So yeah, let's do it. I'd love to look through some of them. So we'll set that time up real soon.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, my brother. Thank you.
Right.
Have a blessed one. Peace to you.
All right,
family, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Brother Luke, or Lumumba, rather, Uncaged. And we're going to ask that question. What do y'all know about Mother's Day for real? I mean, not just, you know, the good sentiment that we all, you know, feel and espouse, but what do you really know about the history of it? We're going to talk about that when we come back. I'm gonna go
And we're back. Hold on, let me disconnect this. Hold on 1 minute. There we go. All right, family, we are back, and what we're going to do now is go to our live line back again, and we're going to talk to Brother Lumumba on K. So bear with me for a moment. I'm going to dial him up right now. Greetings, greetings. How are you this evening?
Excellent.
Okay,
excellent.
All right. Sound like you got a lot of background noise there, though.
Okay, how's that?
Okay, great. That's better, right? Okay, but I'm getting an echo. If you have your computer on, you're going to have to turn, either go away from it or turn it off, because I'm getting like a echo background.
Okay.
Nope, still something going on in the background there.
Yes, how's that?
Okay. Yep, that sounds better. All right, Sammy, so listen, we're talking with Brother Lumumba Uncaged. And remember, earlier we were kind of raising some questions about Mother's Day. So before we go to the suggestion that Brother Lumumba raised and is now bringing forward an initiative, I want to know what you know about Mother's Day. And again, we know that it's a good feeling and it's a good sentiment and all of that, but so was Christmas. Okay, and I'm sure a lot of folks ain't doing that like they were, at least I hope not. But anyway, so Dr. Reverend Isaka Musa Barashango did some incredible work when he talked about European holidays and what a lot of that really represented symbolically. So what do you really know about Mother's Day? Well, let's give you a few little tidbits. Okay, Anna Jarvis is the woman who was the founder of Mother's Day in 1908. They say that she passionately now they're saying that she passionately opposed the commercial growing of Mother's Day. Okay, so initially, let me give you a little background, okay, and why it said later as Mother's Day began to grow, she began to be against it. Because that wasn't the intent that she initially had. So here's how the story goes. Anna Jarvis, who had no children of her own, by the way, conceived Mother's Day as an occasion for honoring the sacrifices individuals' mothers made for their children. Okay. In May of 1908, she organized the first official Mother's Day event at a church in her hometown of Graston, West Virginia, as well as at Wanamaker's department store, which, by the way, y'all, is right here in Philadelphia. Y'all, St. Philly is an interesting place. So your first Mother's Day was held at a church in West Virginia and Philadelphia. And it says this is where she lived at the time. Jarvis then began writing letters to newspapers and politicians pushing for the adoption of Mother's Day as an official holiday.
By 1912, many other churches, towns, and states were holding Mother's Day celebrations, and Jarvis had established the Mother's Day International Association. Her hard-fought campaign paid off in 1914 when President Woodrow Wilson signed the bill officially establishing the second Sunday in May as Mother's Day. Jarvis conceived of Mother's Day as an intimate occasion, a son or daughter honoring the mother they knew and loved, and not a celebration for all mothers. For this reason, she also stressed the singular mother rather than the plural. She soon grew disillusioned as Mother's Day almost immediately became centered on buying and giving of printed cards, flowers, candles, and other gifts. Okay, I'm going to stop right there. So that's a little history, y'all, about Mother's Day. So now, again, it's a good idea to recognize our mothers, needless to say, but should we continue to observe it the way that others have given it to us? Oh, and by the way, a little sidebar. Jarvis was also paying close attention to mothers who were mothers of those who were of war, meaning their children, sons or whatever, was at war, okay? And that was the way of also saluting them. So here we are today, 2022, carrying on the traditions of other people. And let's now go to Brother Lumumba Uncaged and kind of hear what he's saying and proposing and why. Brother Lumumba, what's your thoughts about what I just read?
Wow, indeed. You know, history is so very much important so that we can make sure that we learn and continue to grow and develop and not continue to make the same mistakes, continuing the same actions. So indeed, I believe I echo also peace to the family, peace and love. You know, thanks for allowing me to speak on your platform. Much appreciated. With that being said, as we need to, as I echo what you were saying, we need to definitely celebrate our own culture and heritage and make sure that we're putting forth our own efforts in the form of self-determination, self-reliance, you know, and, you know, really heeding the teachings of our ancestors. And so, you know, applying some of those principles, you know, to our everyday lives. And so, you know, proposing Queen Mother's Day. And, you know, I was actually thinking May the 2nd in honor of Queen Mother Moore. And so that was actually the day of her transition. And so giving reverence to Queen Mother Moore, giving her flowers, you know, and remembrance and striving forward to uphold that model of the mother, Queen Mother. Upholding the principles of the mothers of civilization.
All right. So it definitely sounds like an idea that we need to expand on. And again, maybe starting with Queen Mother Moore, but of course, you know, creating the whole concept that we come up with that focuses on, you know, our mothers, queen mothers. So we're going to definitely have more conversations about that. But family, if you have a thought about that, please, you know, press one now. We'd love to hear what your opinion is about there being Queen Mother's Day and it being about our black women. If you have a comment or thought about that, please press one now. We would love to hear what your opinion is about that. Okay, let's go to caller. You're at 2274. 2274, thank you for calling and tuning in, and your mic is open.
Hey, Empress, how you doing? It's Bush.
Hey, brother. How you doing, Brother Adrian?
I'm better than great. I was on a wonderful conference today with the National Leadership Conference where Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. was the keynote speaker. And speaking of Queen Mother's Day, you know, let's also acknowledge his mother. We talk about Fred Hampton Sr., but what about Deborah Johnson, who
That's
carried
right.
Fred Hampton Jr.,
That's right.
who was also, you know, when her man was murdered, she still
right.
carried and birthed that baby that we're producing now. But my opinion and my thoughts about it is very simple. We talk about this day, Queen Mother's Day. Every day should be Queen Mother's Day. We shouldn't have a Eurocentric day set aside to honor our own mothers. We ought to do that every day. As a matter of fact, what I've learned when I was coming into conscience by members of the Nation of Islam here locally in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, is everybody ought to give their mother a gift on their birthday, because it was the mother that went through the pain and the process to bring us into existence. So that's how we should honor that all the time, as well as being productive citizens for our community, economically, spiritually, and trying to work and connect with each other so we could build a better future. So as they age and get older, and some of them are having some medical issues and some physical problems, we can be there for them to be a voice for them like they were a voice for us. When they changed your diaper, they were the voice for you, because you couldn't change the diaper for yourself at you know, when you was a newborn baby. So we ought to give that respect back by being producers and creators in our community to be a voice for them as they get older.
Oh, I love those ideas, Brother Adrian. And so I'm taking notes, and we're going to have these discussions further. But here's my dilemma. I always ask, what's the plan of action for that to happen? Because a lot of times we talk about, well, this is what we can do, this is what we should do, but the other part of that is how to make that happen. So I definitely agree. Mm-hmm, go ahead.
Number one, starting with my own mother first, that's number one as she trying to get through this operation on her knee. I mean, where mm-hmm. she went through with the knee replacement, number one. Number two, fighting for those innocent black women that have been unjustly put in prison and raped in federal penitentiaries. That's something we have to address, and I'm speaking of, and when I say we, I mean black men in particular, but black people in general, but first starting with strong black men, advocating for black women who have been falsely put in prison, like Gloria Johnson, who is affectionately known as Mama Glow, you know, individuals like that, as well as Momia, but fighting for those individuals who went through the trauma of losing children, because no parent wants to lose their child. And from my own experience in dealing with mothers, and because we spend, well, really parents, but we're speaking of mothers, mothers who have lost their child, a lot of them have never gotten over it. I mean, like Emmett Till's mother, she never really fully recovered emotionally over the loss of her son Emmett, but she was able mm-hmm. to pull through and carry through with lots of support. So we got to give support for those mothers who have tragically lost their children to gun violence in the educational system, or whose children have been falsely put in prison. That's where we have to start supporting those individuals, those mothers on the grassroots level, like Sister Tawana, who lost a brother, you know, which mm-hmm, some mm-hmm. older women have taken on the role of mothers, even though they were the older sister, because mm-hmm. the mother had passed for whatever reason. So we have to give support to those individuals.
Okay.
That's where it starts.
So again, I'm taking notes, and I want to remind everyone that next Sunday there will be a Zoom meeting primarily for black men. For serious black men. Now, you heard some of the suggestions that Brother Adrian has. You heard one of the suggestions that Brother Lumumba has. So we want to know not only your suggestions, family, but the plans of action. Because I hear what Brother Adrian is saying. This is what we need to do. And he's talking about starting with himself. But unfortunately, folk need, shall we say, either a little more incentive or a little more guidance or a little more structure. That's just the reality. So what and so that's what we're talking about now with coming up with the suggestions, but now also coming up with what's the plan of action, what is going to be the actual mode of operations that is going to initiate and put this stuff in place. We've got to have that. Those kinds of pieces and components now as well. So again, family, next Sunday, and we'll be sending it out on Monday, the link, because we're asking brothers to register for this particular conversation. Again, on next Sunday at 7 o'clock, I think it's the time, Eastern time, we're asking black men, and we're going to be sending out letters here in Philly, because we're not going to let brothers get away with what they've gotten away with over the years, meaning they talk a lot of stuff, some of them about violence and abuse, and some of them, even Brother Adrian, they be talking about just what you just said, about what we need to do to help our women and blah, blah, blah. Well, let me tell you, I've been watching very carefully, and let me tell you how that's playing out here in Philly. Not. So now we're sending letters. Now, don't get me wrong, there's a few, but I'm talking about you have at least 50 groups in Philadelphia or organizations that are primarily black men, right? If you ask, what do you do as it pertains to the violence and abuse of our women, 90% of them will have to tell you nothing, even though many of them are getting funded to deal with some kind of anti-violence thing. So now we're going to press that button and say, that ain't going down like that anymore. So this week, this letter, we already started sending out emails. Haven't gotten many responses. So now we're going to document the letters that we send to the various groups and organizations, the pastors and the churches and all of that. We're going to document who responds and who doesn't when it comes to the issue of rape, kidnapping, sex trafficking, etc. We're literally now going to document who responds, who does what, and so forth. Enough is enough. We're not letting people get away with this anymore, because the increase of kidnapping and missing girls and black women in our communities is so high now, it is unbelievable. And a lot of these groups and organizations are only talking about gun violence. We ain't having it. No more. Okay, so next, for those that are interested, you can email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com, or you can text us at 267-636-3802. Again, 267-636-3802. This is a national call, because when we come together for the Million Woman March reunion, oh, we're going to show some evidence. They say we're going to bring the receipts, Brother Adrian. We're going to let it be seen that we contact Reverend so-and-so, or we contacted Brother so-and-so, or we contacted Minister so-and-so to help do something in regards to the violence and abuse of our women and girls. What do you think about that, Brother Adrian? You there, Brother Adrian? I'm not hearing you. Okay, let's step back to Brother Luke. Are you there, Brother Lumumba?
Face.
Oh, okay. We got you. All right, so what's your thoughts on that? I don't know what happened to Brother Adrian. I'm not hearing you, Brother Adrian.
Indeed, indeed. I'm already signed up, so.
Okay.
Yes, yes,
all
indeed.
Right.
Yes, indeed.
Absolutely. All right, family. So, again, that's happening next Sunday, and we'll be sending it out on Monday. We'll be sending you the link for the Zoom so that you can register. And please share it, family. Share it with other brothers that you think, you know, will want to be involved in some kind of way, in whatever kind of way. Okay, looks like Brother Adrian is back. Let me see if I can bring him back in now. Okay, Brother Adrian, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, great. Yeah, so what are your thoughts about what I just said, Brother Adrian, in terms of really now putting it out there so that we're gonna what they say, shame the devil or whatever, some stuff. The point is, we ain't letting folks get away with this anymore. So what are your thoughts
right,
about
tell,
that?
Yeah, tell the truth and shame the devil. See,
shame
I think it's very necessary because, see, the thing is, our people are literally dying in the streets. And that's why it's so serious and intentional, because our people are literally dying in the street, while we could say, well, such and such, this and that. You know, I canceled an event tonight. Now, I didn't cancel. I didn't go to an event tonight because they wanted to showcase some things, and one of them was me. But I was like, well, while our people dying in the street, you know, we didn't have time to focus on that. We have to focus on addressing those issues that are killing our people, food, you know, prison system, all those things. And I know one person or one organization can't do it all. That's why we need to create networks, and that's what I was dealing with in the National Leadership Conference. Our networks, we have to get with individuals like Chairman Fred Hampton and others to address these issues, because it's so many across the board. And this is why we need to create conflict resolution groups when individuals are murdered due to disagreements and small disagreements. We need to be the ones stepping in, because organizing police gang units is not solving the problem. They create more of the problem, but we have to be more of a security blanket for our people. And this is why I'm such an advocate for ownership, because when we own, we have more of an investing interest in helping our people. Examples that I can point to here in Baton Rouge, I know an older couple. You know, they've been married close to 50 years. They own a small business on 75th Street, which is not far from me in Louisiana. And I saw the wife and the husband break up several fights, and they weren't Superman and Wonder Woman and come on with armor. Just the concern of, hey, I want to protect not only what I own, but protect the people that are outside. They were able to officiate and stop people from killing each other. I know an older man who does events at Southern University. You know, he's broken up several fights between grown people sitting in a chair just because he had the concern to do so. So when we fight for ownership and advocacy, then we can officiate and stop our people from killing each other and focus on what the real enemy, which is the United States governmental system and the way it's organized.
That's right. Well, as we've been saying, my brother, it's showtime now. We're going to really see who is about what, because a lot of times from what I've seen, again, in Philly and in other locations, unless people are able to profit from it, they ain't on it. You see, we now have poverty and cultural pimps. And so they see the crisis, they see the need for certain things, and they'll do, you know, different things, but behind that is going to be some dollars. You know, a lot of times people are not doing things in our communities unless there's some dollars connected to it. And so, you know, yes, as people say, well, you know, folks got to eat, they got to do this. Yeah, you do. But if you're not smart enough to figure out how to do that without having to connect it to what's going on with the masses of our people, then I'm going to tell you right now, there's something going on with that. You see, there's something going on with that. And that needs to be called out. You say, because the way this thing is going now, folks are profiting off of the pain of our people to the degree where, you know, it's not getting much done, that's for sure. And what is getting done is really the continuation of what's going on in this system. They ain't bringing no real solutions.
No,
and again,
but you
like
got to look
said,
at
Brother
who controls
Adrian. Right. And
well,
again,
well, you got to look at who controls them. When you talk about 501c3s, who controls 501c3s? The government and, grant money controls 501c3s. The Black Panther Party, the original Black Panther Party, they said thousands of people had schools and they didn't get 501c3s. So when I interviewed Bobby Seale, who was the co-founder of the Black Panther Party, I said, how did y'all do it? Well, we started with small black businesses. Us connecting and networking with each other can solve a lot of our problems if we just do that. That's simple but not easy. Well, it's really easy, but people, some of us are making it hard, and we have to address education and the white supremacy indoctrination that we have been taught. So we have to connect with brothers in Haiti and London and so forth. So, I mean, I tell people all the time, black people were doing better 20 years after slavery than we are now because we did understand one thing. There was us and there was them. So when they drew the red line and said, okay, you all who are black cannot come to this community unless you're working, we understood to pull our resources together, not just money, but to pull each other together, which turned into money, and own the businesses, land, run the schools, set up education, trades, and all those things. All we have to do is do what we did before. And with the modern technology, us connecting together shouldn't be as difficult as we're making it. That's all we got to do. Yeah. Let's do what we did before.
Well, my brother, you're right. That is kind of all that we have to do. But unfortunately, because of a lot of the other stuff that's now been put in the mix, that's not going to happen like that. And what I suggest that people now do is just do it. Because with all of this other mishmash, woof-wash stuff that's going on, the distractions, the misrepresentation, and the other kind of confusion that is now in our midst that wasn't there to that extent before, a lot of our people are not going to function in the way that it was. That's just not going to happen, and especially now after COVID. So we need to recognize that we're in the 21st century, and those of us that are of similar and like minds better be about it, and getting it done. See, because the reality is the other distractions that is put in our past now will really take us away from the goals and objectives that we can reach. And I'm not saying don't do that. For example, what I've realized now is I tell people, if you have a 501, here's how you do it. It's like any other game, right? I tell them, go get that on one hand. On your other hand, you need to be doing something else, you see. So I've learned the reality of where people really are, but I challenge them and I say, are you doing more on the other end than what you're doing with your 501? Because that's going to tell the story.
Yeah.
That's going to tell
the
story.
Don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, so I tell people, since they're caught up in that, I tell them, go get it. However, show me what you're doing that's independent. Because if you can't show me something or tell me about something that you're trying to do independent, I know what you're really about. For real, for real. See, we've got to create the scenarios that help to really bring some clarity to what's really going on. We have to do that now. Show me what you're doing, trying to do, or supporting this independent. That's going to tell the story now. All the other stuff, that's going to, you know, as Brother Rajakhan just said, it's time to expose this stuff. But doing it in such a way that you can bring the receipts. And that's what we're talking about doing, you see. So, Brother Adrian, thank you much. I did talk to Chairman Fred earlier, and he's going to be on our program next Saturday for sure. He was supposed to come on last Saturday, and he got caught up in, he had a speaking engagement that ran over. And so he couldn't join us at the time we scheduled him for last week, but he said he's definitely going to join us next week. For New Day. And family, again, I want to remind everyone that starting tomorrow, registration or pre-registration, early registration begins for the national A Million Black Women Rising Summit. Okay, so we'll be telling you more about that later on. And by the way, the Brothers in Support membership is coming as well. So again, get ready for next Sunday. Brothers can support in one way or the other, but they need to be doing something. This is the 25-year anniversary of the Million Women March, and we are really expecting our brothers to step up and show some love, show some support. I mean, we've battled this thing through for 25 years. We deserve it, okay? So come next Sunday, we want black men to support this year's 25-year anniversary in some kind of way, shape, fashion, or form. And we'll be telling you more about it next week. All right, Brother Adrian, what else is going on in Baton Rouge before we let you go?
Well, what we're going to be doing, what we discussed, is the showcase. I'm getting closer to completing a documentary called Scott Neville Renaissance, where I'm encouraging directly black people support black businesses so we could create jobs in our own community, which we can do, which is it's simple, and I'm making it simple. Like I said, none of this stuff is easy, but it is simple. So I'm working towards that, working towards connecting with other black urban CEOs, as they call them, and we're going to get to the grassroots level to try.
All right. Love it. Love
it. Our community so we can elevate ourselves.
All right. Wonderful. Well, I don't know if you know, brother, last night we kind of did a little a program to recognize our women that are in the reparations movement previously or were pioneers. So that was to launch our African Women for Reparations cadre. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention. I'm going to be sending you some information on that. And I want to remind everyone again that Brother Adrian and others are a part of our We Charge Genocide 21. We'll be doing a special session on that very soon. Of course, Cali House's transition date is coming. Malcolm X, of course, transition date, Earth Day is coming, and we'll be doing something around that time as well. Focusing on black human rights. So we got a lot of stuff we get ready to bring forward. Lastly, what Brother Adrian just said, we're going to start pushing even more about National Black Solidarity Day. Because Brother Adrian, listen, this is a way that black businesses all over the country can do something in a synchronized, powerful manner, where for one day we don't spend any money except with our own people. The idea was to spend no money at all on that day. But, you know, we get it. You know, it's a different time. So we're saying if you got to spend some money on that day, make sure it's with our people. So family, y'all have enough time to get prepared for that. Black Solidarity Day, national, we're going to be pushing this year. Brother Adrian, tell the black businesses that you're working with that they need to get on board, because we're going to list the black businesses that we're telling people they should support for Black Solidarity Day. Okay? Now, for this year, it'll be on November the 7th this year. It's always the day before Election Day. So this year is on November the 7th. So again, family, we'll be giving you more information to help you set up a committee in your city. But the idea is on November the 7th, there should be a national Don't Spend No Money with No White Folks Day. November 7th. Oh, now, we can't do that, Brother Adrian. If we can't hold our money for one day. Not spend it with somebody, that's going to tell a lot right there.
Yeah, and don't spend it with no non-blacks, period. And I'm glad you pointed that out, because I'm working with the brother who's heading up the new Black Wall Street project here in Baton Rouge. His cousin does that in Stonecrest, Georgia, which I did visit, where they had bought 125 acres of old Target, and they're housing the economic hub for black people. But I'm glad that you brought that up, because not to spend money with non-blacks for one day, not only is it doable, but they are black businesses that sell the products that we use anyway.
That's right. Well, like I said, we're going to see. We're going to be pushing it. We're going to get some flyers and other kinds of things ready to be put out there. And, again, we need for black businesses to subsist so that we can put their name out there so that way people know in every city, if you have to buy something or spend some money on that day, this is where you need to go. Okay, so y'all get ready because we're coming with some stuff now. It can't just be some conversation about what we need to do. It has to be into action. We've got our son here. So we're getting ready to do this. Let's see who's going to stand up and make it happen. Brother Edmund, thank you so much. I look forward to talking to you later on this week and definitely on next Sunday when the brothers come together.
All right. Thank you for having me.
All right. Brother Lumumba, your closing comments. You got anything else you want to share with us?
Yes, please give thanks. So just to clarify, I'm definitely in agreement with Brother Ray Ray. You know, I'm in support of giving the gift or what have you on the birthday, on your son's birthday.
Oh, that was Brother Adrian.
That's a good, right, yes, I think that was a good concept and idea as well. But I, as far as just clarifying the Queen Mother's Day, my suggestion for the second was for all mothers, but in that representation, Queen Mother's Day and Queen Mother Moore, just in that celebration of May the 2nd, and that was also because of the season that represents, which is the springtime, which is rebirth and renewal. And so I thought that was because, it's, you know, a lot of times with these holidays, they're tapping into different energies, right? And so when I was saying we need to tap back into what the ancestors were teaching us, you know, that is our culture and our sciences that we develop, you know, dealing with nature and just recognizing, you know, what's before us as far as nature and the earth is concerned. And so being in tune with the earth and the universe, you know, as African descended people. And with that, you know, actually doing something like making dinner, you know, for your mother. You know, I thought, you know, so that was the full concept and idea for that.
All right. Well, we're going to be definitely talking more about the suggestions, the ideas, and the plans of action come next week because we want our brothers in support to now become a real viable entity as a part of MWM. We don't want to just wait until the time of the anniversary. We want to make sure that there's actual things that our brothers are doing. And by the way, we're holding this year our first what we call Baba Binti dance or dinner. And the Baba Binti concept is for black men to have their daughter, granddaughter, niece, you know, little cousin, whatever, little sister, can be older sister too, but again, Baba means father and Binti means daughter. So it doesn't necessarily have to be the daughter, but it's just the concept of a father, of a black man, you know, really doing something with particularly young girls. It can be older ones too, but particularly the younger girls, so that they can really see some serious, strong black men, and that those black men are treating them in a way that they will always remember. And so we're going to create that kind of venue, that kind of situation here as a part of MWM25 this year when we kick off with the Baba Binti dance, dinner, luncheon. We're not sure which one is going to be, a luncheon or a dinner, but it's going to definitely be some dancing because, you know, we got to make sure that the folks will hear some drumming and stuff. But again, once we kick it off here in Philly, we're taking it nationwide for 2023. So, you know, we'll be setting some examples here and, again, building from that point. So y'all get ready. All right. All right, family. Before we close out, we're going to go to Ashaka Musa Barashango. And for those who are not familiar with him, well, you need to be. because he definitely has some powerful words to tell and to talk about when it comes to European holidays, right? So we are going to talk, or we're going to hear just a few words from Ishakamusa Barashango, who just happened to be from Philly, by the way. But, you know, he was all across the board, you know, just an incredible, incredible black man, historian, and scholar, Ishakamusa Barashango.
May you receive the blessings of Almighty Creator, revealed to all, known by many names, and of our positive African ancestors, rest and abide with each and every one of you. May the protective hand be with you, their prosperity and wisdom. I am indeed thankful this evening to be able to gather with you in the discussion of this subject. And I'm thinking about the fact that there was a time when more than two Africans would gather together here in this hostile environment to discuss anything that would be with suspicion. But if they were found discussing the topic that you discussed in this place, their lives were set on the line. Tonight we're able to gather here in this setting that is truly a setting of our own creation and have our own little bit of Africa tonight, our own oasis in the midst of the storm. And so it is a wonderful experience to be able to share that with you here this evening. How you feeling? You're looking good, looking real good. I want to give special thanks to the organization that brought us in. I just the AUM. UAM, I'm sorry. Okay. Thank you. UAM. United African Movement, isn't it? Yes, thank you. And the brother Bundy, who was so kind to and looked after me so well once I got here in the city, and I'm so thankful for his kindness here in keeping. Dr. Felder, who I understand is one of my best friends, he's here, one of Fourth Dynasty's best friends. We didn't know that you were with the organization. We're all together. I'm 10 years the foremost press agent for Fourth Dynasty Publishing Company here. Brother Roy Canton and Attorney Maddox, Brother Mark Rowley for his stimulating interview on the program today. I want to thank them. Now, before I get into the topic for this evening, I just have to do a black nationalist commercial. For a moment to mention to you, who know that we are with Fourth Dynasty Publishing Company, which is owned and operated by the Barashango family, and which is committed to disseminating the accurate information relative to African people. And to this evening, unfortunately, I was only able to bring a few copies of African People and European Holidays, A Mental Genocide, Book 1 and 2, but I do have a good bit of copy, The God, the Bible, and the Black Man's Destiny, which covers some 800 historical, biblical, and scientific facts on the African origin of the Bible, the African origin of Christianity, and many other subjects along that line, as well as the very beautiful African Woman, Original Guardian Angel, which documents some of the wonderful and major contributions made by the black woman, her creation of an ongoing contribution to world civilization. So they are available there at the table. Our topic this evening in our discussion is holidays from the perspective of African-centered historical reality. So often we are compelled by the conditions and the environment, we said that to look at things in a fantasy manner, a fantastic way, rather than from the viewpoint of reality. The object of the whole African-centered movement in bringing forth accurate information, not only in terms of history, but every other field of discipline, is to be certain that we as a people are able to be confronted with and be made to deal with and to have the tools, the powerful weapons of reality. Whether that reality is pleasant or unpleasant, we must be able to deal with reality in order to be rational and sane and to reach that place for which we are being called to go. And that's why we entitled this topic tonight, Holidays from the Perspective of African-Centered Historical Reality. Why historical reality? I'm reminded of the words of Elhaj Malik El-Shabazz, peace be upon him, affectionately known to us as Brother Malcolm, when he said, of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward all research. And so it is. When you get into the history of something, then you have a better understanding of what it is, what it was created for, what are its purposes and objectives. So that's why we're approaching it from the perspective of an African-centered historical reality. African-centered because there is, has been, and we are still being subjected to a Eurocentric worldview. And there's still a great and wondrous struggle going on to break the bonds of that worldview. And so now we must view things from what we are, and we are an African people. I know I don't have to explain that to anybody in the internet. And that's how you see things, how you look at things, from your experience. We have several premises I would like to discuss with you before we get into the historical elements of the topic tonight. The first premise is, holidays are the institutionalized celebration of the thoughts and ideas of a particular philosophical worldview. What does that mean in essence? Not that you really need an explanation of it, but I always have to explain sometimes even what I say to myself. The institutionalization of our own thoughts and ideas and our own creations. Part of the process of doing that and helping to keep those thoughts and ideas alive and nurturing us and motivating us in our everyday existence and our everyday struggle and fight for total mental, physical, and spiritual liberation from this beast here, from this hostile environment. As a part of that process, celebrations play a very definite role. Holidays are important to us. But in those holidays, if they do not reflect our life experience, if they do not reflect the positive aspects of our worldview, of how we see the world, of how we understand the things around us, then we have to ask the question, what good are those holidays to us? Should we be celebrating them or should we be celebrating something else? Let me stop here for a minute to discuss something that Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop set forth. And that is the idea, it has always been known to us who have been aware and thinking people and in the process of a continued evolutionary path of enlightenment, that there was a quantitative and qualitative difference between the way that we as a people look at the world and the way Europeans look at the world. Brother Malcolm stated it so beautifully and straightforward. That when you sit down to the table with the white man to discuss an issue, to discuss an idea, you're not speaking the same language. It was difficult for some of the Negro leaders of that day to understand what he was talking about, because they knew they were saying the same words. They were discussing the Constitution. They were discussing the Bill of Rights. They were discussing the Declaration of Independence and all those things. The white man was using the very same words that the black people were using. However, they were not speaking the same language. simply because they had a diametrically opposed worldview. Dion puts it in these words. It's the difference between xenophobia and xenophilia. And that is, the European has a fear of anything different of other people and cultures that is different from him. And therefore, he must control them in some manner or eradicate them. Like the child who has never grown up, you stop running around here. Here's black men, a big Nubian looking black men that can snatch telephone poles up out the ground talking about, I got to go to work for the man. He's not the man. You the man. He never grew up. And why do I say that? How can I say that? I can say it because Jerusalem Slim, who you call Jesus Christ, we used to call him Brother Jerusalem Slim in the seminary, said that it is by the fruit of a tree that you know what that tree is. What he produces is what you know what that tree is. And the very fact that when people do not do what he wants them to do, he acts just like a little child, like the demon sees. Either you do it, or I'll hate you. Or I'll take my marbles and get out of the game. Most of the time, I wish he would just take his marbles and go on by his business. But he's not satisfied with doing that. He got to come back and try to control the game again. He's perfectly all right with me because I know left on our own, we have nothing else to do. But on our own, we can do it. And we'll do it fast. We won't drag it out then. But this xenophobia, this fear, is the motivating factor, as Dr. Francis Wilson tells us in the book, The ISIS Paper Keys to the Color, is the major motivating factor of white folks. Now, I'm going to come to the holidays, but I got to lay this groundwork here. I hope y'all are patient with me.
And that again was Dr. Ashaka Musa Bashango. Part two next week, y'all. Until then, we're going to say promote you to the Shinda. And remember, tune in to our sister Keisha Thursdays, Thorough Black Talk. You can also find Brother Mike Graves on YouTube as well. Sister Keisha's on YouTube with Thorough Black Talk. Brother Mike Graves is on YouTube with Community Cop. Also updated editions are available for both of their programs. Again, if you miss one, you can always hear another one or hear it at any time. And of course, Brother Lee is on Sundays, 7 o'clock, Africa on the Move, and he's on Blog Talk Radio. Again, family, next week, brothers will be coming together on Sunday, 7 o'clock, and we'll be back next week at 10:30, our regular time, of course, bringing you more information updates. And next week joining us again will be Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. All right, family, again, to the next time, we say promote you to the Shinda. And remember, there will not be any justice. There will not be any peace until black folks really step it up and do what we know we're supposed to do as our ancestors are now mandating it to be so. But nevertheless, we will move onward by any and all means necessary. Peace out. I'm gonna know what it's all about.